We're holding at the bottom of Samach Vav Amud Beis, beginning the 10th perek of the Masechta. So now we're going to be focusing, this perek and the next one are going to be focusing on the dinim of a woman's nedarim and her father or her husband canceling them. Up until now in the Masechta, we've been talking about nedarim in general. Really, we discussed at the beginning of the Masechta, why is it that nedarim and also nazir, what are they doing in Seder Nashim in the first place? And one of the explanations is because, in fact, the pasuk goes into great detail about the nedarim of a woman where that her father or her husband has the ability to cancel them. So therefore, so in a certain sense, then that belongs in Masechta, it belongs in Seder Nashim. We had in Ksubas already, we had something about a neder that a wife makes that the husband has the ability to cancel. So now in this perek and the next perek, we're going to be dealing with that whole matter in great detail. If you look in the psukim, at the beginning of Parashas Matos, you have the introductory pasuk that Moshe speaks to the Rosh HaMatos. The second pasuk that he says the general concept of nedarim, the person makes a neder or a shvua, he has to keep what he said, and he's not allowed to desecrate his word. Then the whole rest of the chapter. The following 14 psukim are all about the dinim, about a woman's neder, and what her father or her husband can do about it. So that's going to be the subject of these next two prakim. And one point is also we're going to have, up until now, we've been dealing very little with drashas psukim because most of what we've been learning is based on svara. Once we know the concept of a neder, and once we established back in the first parak that and how a neder is formulated, which there, that we learned from Sukkim, but after that, all the details, what's included and what's not included, and all the other things like that, was basically we go according to Loshim Re'adam. But now we're going to be dealing a lot with drashas of Sukkim because we're going to be dealing with how exactly we extract the dinim of what happens with a woman's neder, how we extract them from the psukim. Some basics that we should talk about that we're going to be dealing with throughout these next 25 blocks until the end of the Masechta are the basic idea is, and the Torah divides them into three parts. You have the first part, it describes a girl before she's Mekodesh, while she's still living at home before her Erusin, where then the Pasuk says that her father has the rights over her Nedarim. Then there's the second one, which is going to be the subject of our Mishnah and the Gemara on it, which is going to be when she's an Arusa. We're there, as we're going to learn, we're going to see how we derive from the Psukim that her father and her chosin together have to cancel her nedarim. Otherwise, if only one of them does it, it doesn't work. And then the third one is after she's married, where then her husband has exclusive rights to cancel her nedarim. One other thing we should mention is that we're going to have many other details that are going to be negeya throughout these next two prakim. But one other one that we should talk about to begin with, because we'll need it for this piece of Gemara, is when the woman makes a neder, there's a number of different things that the man in her life, her father or her husband, as the case may be, can do with that neder. He can say good for you. That's called I approve of that neder. That's called hakama. And then what happens is the neder is in effect, and he can't cancel it afterwards. They could be matter neder as anybody can do with their neder, but the husband or the father no longer has the rights over it after hakama. Then you can have the opposite is hafara. He can say, I don't like this neder. I disapprove of it. The pasuk actually uses two different terms for it. The pasuk uses the word heini and it uses the word hefer. So Rashi quotes on the pasuk, bringing from Sifri, that essentially they amount to the same thing. It means that he vetoes or he cancels the neder. He says, I don't approve of this neder. So Rashi explains that the word heini actually means, is actually a word in Lashon Kodesh that means to discourage somebody or dissuade somebody or talk somebody out of doing something, and hefer means to actually cancel. So he has the ability to do that. He has the ability to say, I don't approve of that neder. Now to do that, as we're going to learn in these two prakim, he only has until shkia of that day, of the day the neder was made, to do that. If he doesn't do that by shkia, then the neder remains in effect. The third thing he can do is he does nothing. He doesn't say anything one way or the other. So he has until shkia to do hafara, to cancel the neder, to veto the neder. If he does, then it's vetoed. If not, if he didn't do anything by shkia, then it's in effect. another thing that he can do, which we're going to learn about later on, I think we're going to primarily focus on it in the next parak, is in particular with a husband, that he has the ability not to explicitly say that the neder is canceled, but rather to compel her, to force her to violate the neder, where then automatically that means that he implicitly he's canceling the neder. In fact, the Malbim says on the Pesukim, that's what the words Haney versus Hefer. Hefer would be where he actually says, I don't approve of this neder. Haney would be more where he gives her food or gives her drink or whatever it is that she asks it on herself and makes her take it. That would be more Haney. So we're going to talk about that, I think, primarily in the next parak, about the dinim involving that. But those are the basic things. For purposes of the Gemara that we're going to learn today, what's important to know is you have Hakama, where he says, good, I approve of this neder, or Hafara, where he says, I veto this neder. So that's what we're going to be discussing. And the first thing we're going to be discussing then is the case of the Naira Mairasa. So the Mishnah says, Naira HaMairasa, so a Naira we know is a girl within 6 months after she developed Shtei Cyrus. Mairasa, she's had Erosin, but not yet Nisuin. And by the way, all the Mephoshim point out over here, we don't mean Naira as opposed to a Ketana. The fact is, we're going to learn later on that a Ketana, that there's a time a year before a girl turns 13, or before the year before a girl turns 12, or the year before a boy turns 13, even though they're still considered ketanim for all purposes in halacha, but when it comes to nedarim, it's called mufla hasamuch leish or leisha. So it would mean, in other words, they have the ability to make binding nedarim, provided that they know that a neder is actually a promise to Hashem. So during that year, we would have to ask them, do you know what a neder is? And if they say, yes, we know that it is addressed to Hashem, then yes, it is in effect. So therefore, when we say in the Mishnah over here, Naira HaMairasa, we don't mean a Naira as opposed to a Ketana, we mean rather a Naira as opposed to a Begeris. Because once she's a Begeris, once more than 6 months after her Bas Mitzvah, at that point, her father has no more Rishus over her Nedarim anymore or anything else, as we learned in Ksubas. At that point, he doesn't have rights over her Kiddushin or anything else either. Then the dinim that we're going to talk about over here, that her father and her husband jointly are made for her nedarim, that would no longer apply. Because during the Erusin, it has to be that the chosin does it, the orus does it together with the father, and that requires her to be a naira. If she's a begeris, then no, the chosin by himself does not have the ability to do it, and the father already has lost his rishus over her. So avio baila mafirin nereha. Her father and her husband, which is to say her chosin, jointly have to be made for her nedarim. It's not enough that only one of them does it. Now, one thing we have that we're going to learn as we go through the Masechta, that a husband, in a way, the Orus's position is weaker than the husband because the Orus has to do it together with her father. On the other hand, the husband can do it by himself. On the other hand, as we're going to learn as we go further along, the chosin has an advantage, namely that he is able to cancel nedarim that she took on before he ever was ma'aris. So she made a neder, and then she made a neder, and later that same day he was mekadesh her. Then he and her father jointly are able to be mekadesh, are able to cancel that neder, even though it was actually made before he ever came into her life and was mekadesh her. Whereas once they've done nisuin, then it's not like that. We're going to learn throughout these parakim, ein abal meifa bekoidmin, the husband is not able to cancel nedarim that were made before he actually married. There's a sikh actually in Chelek Beis where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind that in a way nisuin is a closer connection between the husband and wife than erusin. On the other hand, we're saying that with doing erusin, he has the ability to go back in time and be made for a neder that was taken before he ever even was mekadesher, whereas once they're married, he's not. That represents in avoda the idea that you can have a person who has a close relationship with Hashem, but he doesn't feel so. He's like a married man already. However, he doesn't consider that he still depends on Hashem, who is our father. So therefore, he may have the ability to accomplish things in avoda, but he's not going to be able to go back and change the past. He's not going to be able to work on things of toihu in particular. Whereas when you have the orus, who the kind of person, he may not have fully actualized his relationship with Hashem yet, but he realizes that he's on a level where he still needs to depend on Hashem, then he has the ability to even go back and change things in the past, to even be able to work on things of Olam HaTohu that otherwise would usually be beyond our ability to be able to be mevater in any way. Continues the Mishnah. Hefer av or hefer abal, if the father vetoed the neder, but the husband did not, the husband again meaning the orus, the chosen, hefer abal le hefer ha'av, or if the husband was, if the husband vetoed it, but the father didn't, ain't mufer, then the neder is not mufer, the neder is still in effect. The Gemara is going to ask why we need to say that. It seems repetitious. Once we said Avio Baila, Mefir and Nidareha, we understand it means both of them. So we'll see in the Gemara. The Ein Sorech Loim Shekiyim Echad Mehen, needless to say, if one of them was Makayim, if one of them said that good for you, this is a good neder, then for sure the other one cannot be made for it, because again, you need both of them to be made for it, and once he was Makayim, then he can't be made for it, as we're going to see. So the Gemara asks, Hainu Reisha. Of Yo Baila Mefir and Dereha. The second line of the Mishnah that says Hefer, the top line of our Amud that says Hefer Avla, Hefer Abal, Hefer Abavla, Hefer Av Einim Mufer. That's just repeating what it said in the Reisha, because the Reisha said Of Yo Baila Mefir and Dereha. So implying that you need both of them. So what is the Mishnah adding with those words? The answer is because without that, Mau Detema Oi Oviha Oi Baila Katoni. Without that, without those words in the Mishnah, you might think that when it says Ovia u baila mafir and dereha, maybe it doesn't mean both of them, maybe it means one or the other one. So the Mishnah had to clarify and say that it means that you actually need both of them. You can't have one without the other. So the Ran says,
why was the Mishnah drafted this way? That's so confusing. It should have said to begin with, Shnehem.
So one second. So the Ran says, because if it said Shnehem, then you would think that maybe what it means is that the husband can't do it by himself without the father, but maybe the father by himself could do it, or vice versa. Even if you said Ad Sheyafedu Shnehem, you wouldn't understand that to mean that both of them have to do it. You would think there are certain circumstances where you need both of them, but there are certain circumstances where you need only one. Maybe what it is you could have, the Ran says, let's say you could have the husband by himself cannot do it. He needs to join together with the father. But on the other hand, the father by himself would be able to do it without the husband, or vice versa.
Well, it still violates Shnehem if you say that one can do it without the other.
No, because neither maybe you one. Would say Shnehem. No, because maybe Shnehem means, for example, it means if one of them, namely the husband, vetoes, then that's not good enough unless the other one, namely the father. But that doesn't tell us the other way around, that if the father does it, you need the husband as well. Maybe not. In fact, the Gemara is going to go on to discuss exactly that point, that maybe when we're going to go through the Psukim and we're going to see how, in fact, we derive this din, that it has to be both of them, and the Gemara is going to entertain that possibility, that maybe the husband himself can't do it, but the father by himself could, and we're going to end up saying that not. So therefore, the Mishnah needs to clarify for us that it's not so. The Rosh points out another point as well. The Mishnah could have used the expression that mefirin yachdal, that they're made for together, and that would clearly imply that it means you need both of them. However, the Rosh says the expression ein zeh loshen haMishnah. That's not the style of the Mishnah. The word yachdav is a Tanakh expression. It's not the kind of expression that you'd find in a Mishnah. In the Mishnah, you would expect to find Shnehem, and like the Ran says, Shnehem is not clear enough. The Rashash actually points out another thing as well. We're going to talk about soon. It doesn't have to be that the father and the husband both cancel it right back to back. It could be that the father hears about it in the morning and vetoes it, and the chosin hears about it in the afternoon, and that still works. As long as there wasn't, as we're going to see soon in the Gemara, as long as it was before Shkia, all on the same day, and as long as there wasn't a hakama, as long as there wasn't a hekim by in the middle, as we're going to talk about soon, then we're good. But if it's set, so the Rashash explains further on the Rosh that if it used the word yachdav, not only is yachdav not the style of wording that the Mishnah uses, but also then we would mistakenly think that it means they literally have to say it one after the other, like to the dibber or something. And it's not so. They could be saying it hours apart and it still works. Therefore, The only way to do it was for the Mishnah to repeat and say the words that if the father is Mefer and not the Baal, or vice versa, and Einim Mofer. Because just using the words, Avio, Baal, Mefer, and Nereha, would not be enough to clarify that.
You would think the father alone should know.
You would think the father alone should, as in fact the Gemara is going to entertain that possibility soon, yeah. So Kamash Malan, so therefore the Mishnah is informing us that not. Ovio Ubaila doesn't mean her father or her husband, and it doesn't mean, let's say, her husband plus her father or her father by himself. Rather, it means it has to be both of them in all cases. The Mishnah continued, Ve'ein sorech loyim shakiyim echad mehen. Then the Mishnah had said, needless to say, if one of them was Makayim, if one of them had done hakoma, as we talked about before, where he says, good, I approve of this neder, then of course the other one can't veto it. So again, the Gemara asks Lomali the Mishnah, why does the Mishnah need to tell us that part? And in fact, there seems to be very little of a chiddush in it. Hashta, yesh loyma, hefer, zeveloi, klum. If you're saying that even if one of them vetoes it and the other one didn't do anything, it doesn't help because both of them have to do the hafara during the same day. Kiyim echad mehen lomali. So why do we even need to say the words kiyim echad mehen? Wouldn't it be obvious if even when one of them was mefer and the other one did nothing, it doesn't work? How much more so when one was mefer and one was mekayim that it shouldn't work? Mekayim means that he says, good, I approve of this neder. Hafer afara means he says, I disagree, I disapprove of this neder, right. So if the Mishnah is telling us that if the father says, I'm mefer, I disapprove of the neder, and the chosin says nothing, we said nothing happens, the neder is still in effect. How much more so if the father says, mufer and the husband says kayim? So why does the Mishnah need to mention that point? It should be obvious from the previous part. If even when one is mefer and the other says nothing, then we're saying that the neder is still in effect. How much more so when one of them is mefer and the other one is kayim, that it should be in effect? Why should the Mishnah even need to inform us of it? So HaGoyzma Rav Ranchburg, by the way, refers to the Yerushalmi, who gives an answer different than our Gemara over here, because we could be talking about a case, which actually we're going to deal with later on in our Perek. Suppose that before he had the chance to, suppose the husband was Mekayim, and then he passed away, where then now the din is that usually once he passed away, before ever doing Nisuin with her, then Rishus goes back to her father, as long as she's a Naira. But nevertheless, in this case, because he was Mekayim, then it doesn't fully go back to the father either.
Even though he dies
afterwards. So in other words, the scenario would be that she made the neder, the chosin was Mekayim, the father was Mefer, then the chosin died. Had he not been Mekayim, we would say no problem, her father alone could be made for the neder, but now that he was Mekayim, then we can't do that anymore. That halacha is correct, and we are going to learn that concept later on in our parak, but our Gemara is going to give a different answer why the mission needs to mention the point about Kiyim.
As long as she's a Ketana.
They're talking about if she's a Ketana or a Naira. Again, if she's a Ketana below 11 years old, she can't make a valid neder anyhow. It has to be that she's a Ketana between 11 and 12, or that she's a Naira. Yeah.
Naira is
during the 6 months after she turns 12, or officially after she gets Shtei Sairus.
So she's
a Begeris.
Begeris is
6 months after Nairus. So yeah. Okay. So the question is why the Mishnah needs to say anything about where he's Makai. The answer is Tzricha Lamisni. Why should the Mishnah even have to tell us that? The answer is Let's say the following scenario. Suppose that, let's say, the father was Mefer, the chosin was Mekayim, then the chozer ha-Mekayim nishal al ha-Kamosar. Then the chosin went and was matir neder for his kiyum. Now we're going to learn later in the parak that is possible. Let's say in a regular case, forget about, for example, the case where you need two people, the regular case where it's the father only when before her erusin, or where it's the husband only after the nisuin, where it's exclusive, he has the exclusive rights. So the din is that if he is Mekayim the neder, and later on he goes and is matir that kiyum, then he goes back to, he's able to be made for the neder. Most of the Rishonim learn it would all have to happen on the same day. So in other words, on the same day, she made the neder, he was Mekayim it, he goes to the Rav, he's matir neder on the kiyum, and then he has till the end of that day to do that for her. There are some Rishonim who learn that maybe he would be able to do that even afterwards. Maybe he'd be able to be matir neder later on. And
the neder can be done like we've just been learning a long time.
No, but that's the thing. If he, it, no, because there's two different things. There's matter neder where he's matter her neder. What we're talking about is to be matter neder on the kiyum, where he had said, so again, she made a neder. She made a neder, let's say, that I'm not going to eat such and such. He is Mekayim and he says, good for you, I approve of that neder. Now, an hour later, he thinks to himself, you know, why did I do that? I should have, I had the opinion, I had the option to veto that neder, I should have done that. So he goes to a rav, not his matter neder, her neder. He's matter neder on his kiyum. He's saying, I regret that I was Mekayim for her and I want to undo that. So now it goes back to, there was no kiyum, therefore he has until Shkia to be made for the neder. That's what we're talking about. So now, again, according to most
Rishonim, the next day would be a problem.
If it were the next day, according to most Rishonim, that would not work because he only has until Shkia of that day to be made for the neder. She would have to go be matter neder on her own. So now the case is, we're talking about, suppose that, let's say, the father was Mefer, the husband was Mekayim, v'chozer ha-Mekayim v'nishal ala kamase. Now the husband, the chosin, who was Mekayim, he went to the Rav and was matur neder on his kiyum. Mau detema, so without the Mishnah telling us, you would think, my de'uke ho'akre, look, he upheld the neder by saying good for you, but now he took that away by being matur that hakama. So therefore, it should go back to the way it was before, where now he has the ability to be mefer together with the father. No, kamash melandim afridin shneim b'vasachas. Therefore, the Mishnah is telling us no; it has to be that both hafaris are together. Now, not literally, we said it doesn't have to be one after the other; it could be many hours apart. But you can't have a hakama in between, even though that hakama was canceled. That is what the Mishnah is telling us by ve'ein sarif loyma shekiyim echad mehem. So now, in other words, the Ran explains like this. So it has to be that you can't have interrupting between one and the other something that would prevent the hafara. Namely, when one of them is Mekayim, so let's consider, when the father is Mefer, the husband hasn't done anything yet. So he hasn't prevented the hafara from taking place. All he's done is he hasn't done his part yet. It's still open whether he's going to do it. But once he does the hakama, now he makes it, now at that point, it means that the original hafara is impossible to take effect because it's blocked by his hakama. Therefore, even now, when he's removed his hakama, then he can't. Now, what would happen now? The Ran talks about an interesting point. What would happen? The Ran brings from the Ramban what could work in this case, though, is, again, suppose that the father was Mefer, the husband was Mekayim, now the husband was Matur Neder, so we said he can't now be Mefer. However, the Ramban learns that if the father is Mefer again, then now the chosin can be made for together with him. We ignore them. It's not so, of course. The previous hafara we ignore because it was blocked by the hakama. But now that hakama was removed, then now we go back to the way we were originally, and now we start from scratch. That is how the Ramban holds. On the other hand, the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam says once there was a hakama that blocked the hafara, even though the hakama was removed, nevertheless, the chosin never has the ability to be made for that neder again, even if the father is saying, now, I still want to be made for the neder. And the reason is, the idea is...
Even if it was done the same day?
We're all talking about the same day, yeah. We're talking about the same day, but still, the Rambam learns, once the chosin was Mekayim, even though he was matur neder on that hakama, nevertheless, he's lost the right over that neder to be able to do a new hafara. And even if now the father joins in and says, I would still like to be made for that neder, still the chosin no longer has the ability to join in with him on being made for that neder because he had previously been Mekayim, even though that hakama was now removed.
That's what the father was.
Does the Rambam learn that also for the father?
Same thing in reverse. Yeah, it would be the same thing if the chosin was Mefer and the father was Mekayim. Yeah, we're just using it as an example, but it would apply to either one. If one was Mekayim and one was Mefer, and then the one who was Mekayim was Matur Neder, so now that Ramban will learn, that's fine. There still is a possibility of being made for this neder. All that we need is that the one who was Mekayim and then was Matur Neder on that kiyum now does a new hafara. The other one also does a new hafara with him, and then we're good. According to the Rambam, that would not work. As long as there ever was a kiyum in between the one hafara and the other, then you cannot do it. The idea would be because you had something in between that blocked the hafara, and even though, now one second, so the Ran goes on to quote the Rashba as asking the question. I mean, once you matu neder, the original neder goes away. It's as if the neder never existed. We're going to talk about in our perek. We talk about this actually we talk about this in Ksubas as well, that when a chacham is matu a neder, it makes it as if the neder never existed, as opposed to when the father or the husband is made for the neder. We're going to talk about, we're going to learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that we're going to end up discussing that they cut it off from now on. In other words, the neder is no longer in effect, but it was in effect until now. So now, if the chosan or the father was Makayim, and then he was matur neder on his hakama, the Rashba asks, so what's the problem? We should consider as though that hakama never existed, just as we would always when you matur neder. So then what's the problem? Why shouldn't we say that it should work? And the answer is, the Ran says, the answer is that because when it comes to an actual maaseh, then that works. For example, in connection with kiddushin, the din is that if a man is mekadesh a woman on condition that she doesn't have any nedarim, and it turns out she has nedarim, then the kiddushin are batal. But if she goes and is matur neder on her nedarim, then the kiddushin is valid. Why? Because then the nedarim are considered as though if they never existed. But that would only work when you have an actual maaseh, namely kiddushin, as a maaseh where he gives her a prota. But over here, we're only talking about words. We're only talking about hakama and hafara. So therefore, we're saying neither one of them, the chosan or the father, has the full ability to be made for the neder. They can only do it jointly. So now, when he was Makayim, even if he was matur neder on his hakama, nevertheless, that still makes it. It's still weak. It's too weak now to join with the other one. And again, according to the Ramban, at least if he does a new one together with the other one, then that will work. If the other one also does a new one, and according to the Ramban, not even that wouldn't even help then. Yeah.
So who's the halacha like?
The halacha. So in Shulchan Aruch it brings like the Ramban. The Paskins like the Ramban. So therefore, as long as one of them was Makayim, even if afterwards he was matur neder, he's lost his ability to be made for this neder anymore.
Now, the case where the guy says, I'm marrying the condition, we don't have any...
Any nedarim, yes.
And she did have, and then she goes afterward to be married for neder, that doesn't help.
So that's the point, that the Gemara explains there in Kedushin, that since when the Chocham, we're not talking about if she's made for the neder, we're not talking about if her father was made for the neder, we're talking about if the Chocham is matur the neder. The difference is when you matur a neder, it's considered as though the neder never existed. So therefore, then in that case, retroactively, she had no nedarim at the time of the kedushin. So we're good.
Even though it was done after he was.
So he gave her the peruta. He said, "I'm anas that you don't have nedarim." Now she went to a chacham after that and was matur the neder. Then good, the kedushin are in effect. Because we say that the hatoras nedarim undoes what was done originally. What was done, it's as if the neder never existed. Yet.
Okay.
As opposed to afara, as we're going to learn in our perek, where it's not that. Instead, the Gemara calls it megas gaias. It cuts it off from now on, as it existed until now. Now, from now on, it's gone. But yeah.
How can the Ramban be makil in something that's deraisa after all?
Because it's not being makil in something that's deraisa. The Ramban holds that our Gemara is saying that. Our Gemara is saying that when there's hakama and then a Torah Sidorim, then it doesn't work. But the Ramban understands our Gemara to be saying that it doesn't work because we can't reuse the hafara of the first one now to combine together with the hafara of the second one because in between there was a hakama. But if we're not reusing it, if we have a new hafara from one and a new hafara from the other, then good. The Ramban holds that can work. That's not what our Gemara is telling us doesn't work. Where's the Rambam? What? The Ramban and the Rambam are both Rishonim, sure. They can't disagree with the Gemara, but they can disagree with each other, of course, right? But the Ramban will understand our Gemara to be saying just that. So you have the father's hafara in the morning, the chosan did a hakama in the morning and then was matur neder on the hakama and then did a hafara in the afternoon. That for sure won't work, the Ramban says. But if you have now, instead of trying to reuse the father's hafara of the morning, if now in the afternoon, after the Hataras Nadarim of the Kiyum, if now the father again is Mefer, and now the Chosin has the ability to be Mefer again, because he was Mater his Akama, then the Ramban will hold. It's not a matter of being Mefer and something Darais. He understands our Gemara to be saying that's perfectly fine. Where's the Rambam? We'll understand our Gemara to be saying that no, that's not fine. The very fact that he did a Hakama, even though he did a Toras Nedarim on it, nevertheless, that weakens his ability to be ever be made for this Neder again. So he can't even do a new Hafara and join together with a new Hafara from the father. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, the Naira Hamayrosa Ovio Baila Mufirin Nedarim. Okay, so we said in the Mishnah that a Naira Mayrosa, that her father and her husband can cancel her Nedarim. Minolon, where do we know that from? Really, very likely, by the way, that line is not really supposed to be between the two dots, because not really, here the Gemara is not really quoting the line of the Mishnah. It's asking, this that we say in the Mishnah, the basic concept, that both of them, you need both of them to cancel her Nedarim, where are we learning it from in the Pasuk? So Omar Rabba, or Rava, it says on the side, maybe it should be, because the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, if the woman will be to a man, and usually the word Havaya, when it comes to a woman, usually refers to Kiddushin. And she has Medorim on her. So now the Pasuk goes on to say, that the Pasuk goes on to mention, that her chosin can be made for the neder, but that section also the Ran explains, and the Mefarish says the same thing, that it's like this. First of all, in the psukim over there, you have two sections that refer to a married woman. First, you have a pasuk that says v'im hoyesia le'ish, that if she's mekudesh to a man, and then the pasuk continues v'shama isha, that if her husband is quiet, then the neder is in effect, but if he cancels it, then the neder is canceled. A few psukim later, you have another one talking about a married woman, v'im beis isha nadara, if she makes the neder when she's in her husband's house. So first of all, since that later one is referring to a fully married woman, she's in her husband's house, necessarily then the earlier one on the face of it has to be talking about an arusa. And furthermore, the Ran explains, and the Mefarish says the same thing. It begins v'im hoyosia l'ish. So therefore, it means it's connecting it with the previous part. Since the end of the previous part was ki heini avia oisa, because her father discouraged her neder and vetoed it. Therefore, it's vetoed. It's canceled. Now v'im hoyosia l'ish. Now, and if she's Mekodesh to a man, then her father still has to be involved in her Hafaras Nedarim. It can't only be her husband. Can't only be her chosin. It has to be her father as well. So Mikan, the Naira Amorosa.
Why does it say Im Hayu instead of Im Haya?
It does. Hoyoy, not Hoyu with a shuruk, but Hoyoy with a choy. Hoyoy is an infinitive. It means, just like in Psukim, you always have ochel, toichel, daber, to daber, yadaber. You have all kinds of double, hasoyach, tiftach, many other expressions like that. We have a double expression. The first one is an infinitive, which is in English, it would be a verb that ends with ing. So and the second one would be when the second one is actually inflected for the tense for the person and the and past or present or whatever. In other words, hoyosia would literally be translated if being she will be. So the first one, the hoyo, is being, talking about the concept of being. The second one is saying she will be, is describing which kind of person we're talking about, she, and when it'll take place. So the hoyo is neither Lashon Zachor nor Lashon Nekeva. That's just the way that verbs work in Lashon Kodesh. Anyway, so from here we learn that Naira Marasa shall vio by the Mufirin Nara. We want to ask
what's
why.
What's the difference between saying Im Hayo and Im Haya?
Hoyo
it's still conditional.
Hoyo would be past tense, but it would be past tense Lashon Zachor. So hoyo would be he was. So you can't say hoyotiyah, that wouldn't be grammatical. And if you said hoysotiyah, that also wouldn't be grammatical. Hoysotiyah would mean she was, she will be. What is it? Was or will be? So no, it's just, again, I'm saying the same way as, for example, the Torah tells us, let's say as far as tzedakah, posoyach tiftach as yod chaloi, opening, shall you open your hand to him? In other words, it means you should certainly open your hand. We learn from it, for example, that you give tzedakah repeatedly, the same way over here, hoyosia. It's an expression meaning that she's become the Kurdish. But the Gemara asks, Emahai Krob in Isuaksiv. Still, well, how do you know? Maybe this pasuk is actually referring to a fully married woman. So maybe then it means that only the, and then we would say that only the father has the, that only the husband now has the ability to be made for her nedarim. Maybe we would say, in other words, that. So maybe we would say, look, an Arusa, yes, it's true, she's already Makodesh, but on the other hand, she's still living at home. He's not yet living with her chassin. So maybe we would say, an Arusa, her father still has exclusive rights over her nedarim. And then with an Arusa, then already her, so with a non-Arusa, when she's still single, or when she's an Arusa, we would say the father has exclusive rights. Only when she's in a Sua, then her husband has exclusive rights. You don't necessarily have a time when you have two different people that have rights over it. So maybe that's what the pasuk means. So the Gemara says, can't imishum nesua kroachunek sivim beis ishanadara. No, because you have a few psukim later. It says, if she makes the neder in her husband's house. So they already were talking about when she's in her husband's house, when she's married. So therefore, obviously, the earlier part, vimahoya sila ish, necessarily has to be talking about the erusin. The Ran also adds, now, even though it is true, we have the Vav over there, Ve'im Hoya Sila Ish, but we would only use the Vav for Drosha only if we had a strong reason to say that it would be like that. So in other words, if we say that the Psukim are talking about an Arusa, then we would say that, okay, it means since an Arusa is sort of in limbo, on the one hand, she's living at home, on the other hand, she's already connected with her chassan, therefore, we'd have a logical reason to say that the Vav is telling us that it means we take the father from the previous section and add him to this section, and it means that both of them have to be made for. But if you say that it's talking about an Nesua, then we would say, okay, the Vav is just a stylistic thing. You wouldn't learn anything from it. So how do we know? So the Gemara is saying, because you have a separate pasuk, mean basically Shonadara. But still, the Gemara asked, "Ema tavayu b'nesua." Still, maybe you could say both of them are referring to a nesua. V'chitema trei kori b'nesua lamali. So you would ask the obvious question: then why do you need two psukim to tell us about the same nesua? Because you would say, "Lameima she'ena bal meifa b'kodmi." Maybe we would say that the Torah wants to tell us with that the husband does not have the ability to cancel nedarim that took place before the nesua. So you could say then that maybe the first section is telling us the basic concept that maybe we would understand the psukim like this. The first section, fine, is clearly talking about she's living at home before Nisuit, before Avison, nothing about that. The second one, which it talks about being Hoya Sealish, we would say that no, we're not going to douse in the Vav. We would say still her father has exclusive rights over her Nadarim because she's still living at home. However, the pasuk also mentions the point about her husband being made for her nedarim to imply that during the erusin, not that her husband has the right to be made for her nedarim yet, but that he has the right maybe to be made for nedarim that took place during the erusin. And then the later pasuk, when it talks about when she's in her husband's house, then that would be teaching us that he can't be made for ones that took place before the erusin or before the nisuin. So maybe we should douch in it that way. The answer is the lav mele shamet mina nu. And if you put the psukim together, then it's pretty clear anyway. So you have like this. Once you're saying that in base isha nadarim, if she makes the neder in her husband's house, and then he has the right to be made for her nadarim, automatically we see from that he can't be made for any nadarim that were before she was in her husband's house. So automatically we know that from that. So we don't need a whole separate pasuk to teach us that din. Therefore, we're back to that we said that the second section, the imhoya sila ish, is talking about after kiddushin, before nisuin, and therefore, since we have the vav, then it tells us that it's the father and the husband together who are made for her nedarim. But the Gemara still says, and the Gemara gives another answer. The iboy sema dahavaya kiddushin mashma. Another answer is you assumed that you were asking that. The thing is that the imhoya stila ish conceivably could mean when she was nesua. No, the word havaya always refers to kiddushin. The same way as you have the yotzav ahoysa le ish acher, for example, refers to kiddushin. The same way over here, the words Vim Hoya Isilish refer to Kedushin, refer to Erisin. So therefore, they can't be referring to Nisuin yet. So that's another way we know that that section has to be referring to an Arusa. And again, since it starts with a Vav, Vim Hoya Isilish, then it means that it's connected with the previous part, and it means that it's the father as well. The Ran, by the way, points out there is a Gemara, there is a Gemara elsewhere that implies that the word Havaya sometimes can, we had in Yevamos, that implies that the word Havaya can refer to Nisuin as well. However, the Ran says, fine, but after Nisuin, there's no reason to think that the father should have rights over her Nedarim anymore. We throughout the whole discussion over here, we've assumed that once she's in her husband's house with her husband, there's no reason her father should still have rights over her. So there's no way that we can understand the Vav, once we consider that there's the Vav there as well, we can't possibly say that the Mahoyesia, even though it's true, sometimes the word Tia can refer to Nisuin, but here obviously it cannot. So therefore, we're left with it has to refer to Erisin, and therefore, so then that leads us to the din that was saying that the father and the husband together have to veto the nedarim.
Because
once she's married, then it should be only her husband.
Respect for and wait for her father, for her husband.
Yeah.
Then
Okay. So the Gemara asks still, Ema av l'chudei mefer. Okay. So how do you know then? Maybe when she's an arusa, maybe the pasuk is telling us the father alone can be mefer without the arus. So maybe on the contrary, maybe we would use the Vav to say like this, look, she's not completely out of the reshus of the father. She's not in the reshus of her husband yet. So what would we say? We would say like this, and this is the point that we brought up before, that we needed the Mishnah to be telling us not to think like this. But now we're working on how we know it from the Pesukim. Maybe we should say, the father by himself can be made for the neder all by himself. He doesn't need the chosim. But if the chosin wants to be mefer, he can't do it alone. He needs it with the father. So in other words, that would be, the pasuk after all is saying that if her husband hears and he's mefer the neder, then it's mufer. But since we have the vav, so it means he can only do it together with the father. But still, we would say that logically, she is still living at home. Yes, she's in arusa, but she's still living at home and is still under her father's reshus because she's a ketana or a naira. So, and we know, for example, that she is under her father's reshus for many other purposes, as we learned in Ksubas. So maybe we would say the father has all by himself can still be made for her neder. Maybe the Vav tells us that. All it is we're saying, if the husband wants to be made for, it's not enough. He also needs the father. So maybe we'd understand it that way. So how do we know that not? The answer is
why would you even think the father, the husband, the chosin has even this chance to be made for?
Well, the psukim after all say that he has, because the psukim say over there the lashon the pasuk uses the expression over there to say that that he has the right to do it, but maybe we would say that it means he doesn't have the expression. The expression is v'im b'yem shmaya isha yoni oisa v'hefer es nidra asher Allah, then good. But maybe that means, so he hears about it, he doesn't like the neder, but nevertheless, v'im hoya isila ish, he needs to join together with the father, he cannot do it by himself. But on the other hand, maybe the father has the exclusive right to do it by himself without the chosin. The answer
is, like I say, he's living with her husband.
Yeah, because after all, she's still living with her father, yeah.
Not even allowed to live with the husband.
Yeah, she's right, exactly, yeah. So the answer is imkain va'osra isa beis avia yoni oisa. Then we'd have to ask. So why would it be in the earlier part of the pasuk when it talks about an unmarried girl lama li? Why would we need to say that? In other words, look back at the pasukim. You have like this. The pasukim for the first section of pasukim describes about a girl living at home before her kiddushin. The pasuk says if her father hears her neder and he's quiet, then the neder stands. But if he vetoes the neder, then it's vetoed. Heini means he. So we said before, heini literally means to discourage her. But the Sifri explains that it's another word for hafara. As I said before, the Malbim explains there's actually a nuance of difference between them. Heini would mean to force her to go against the neder, which implicitly means that he wants to veto it. Hefer would be, he says, I don't approve of this neder. This neder is canceled, but it's still up to her whether she wants to do it or not. In other words, so for example, let's say she made a neder, I won't drink wine. Hafara would mean your neder is no longer in effect. You want to drink wine, gesunte hate, but if you still don't want to drink it without a neder, I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to force you to drink it. What we're going to talk about later, koifa oisa, we're going to learn primarily in the next parak about that he forces her, means that he actually gives her wine to drink and says, you drink this. We're there, even though he didn't say, I'm made for the nether, implicitly he's made for. So the Malbim on the Pesukim explains that it's all talking about the same day. Yeah, but the Malbim explains that the Hecheni versus Hefer refer to those two possibilities. But the Sifri seems to take it more that they're both the same. They're just two names for the same thing.
Hecheni is more powerful, according to...
So according to that, yeah. Anyway, the point is, again, let's look back at the earlier Pesukim. The Pesukim before that, before it talks about an Arusa, the earlier Pesukim, beginning from Pasuk Dalet, talks about a woman who makes a neder while she's living at home and her father hears that if her father Haini, then good, the neder is no longer in effect. Then it starts talking about the Arusa. Now, if we were going to say that the Arusa is like the non-Arusa in the sense that the father has exclusive rights over her nedarim, it wouldn't have needed to say anything in the first part. It could have gone straight to the second part, where she's an Arusa, and said her father has exclusive rights over her nedarim, and we would understand a Kabbal Chomer that when she's not yet an Arusa, of course her father has such rights. So the Pasuk wouldn't need to spell it out for us. Hashta Yesh Loima, going back to the Gemara, because we could say a Kabbal Chomer. B'makom Orus Mefer Av L'Chodeh, when there's an Orus involved, you're going to say the father still has the exclusive rights to be Mefer. Shaloi B'makom Orus Miboya. That would, needless to say, when there's no Arus. So therefore, so we wouldn't need to say that. So obviously, therefore, the Pasuk cannot be implying with the Vav that it means the father could do it by himself when she's an Arusa. But if the Arus wants to do it, he has to do it with the father. No, it has to mean the father no longer has exclusive rights to do it. He has to do it with the Chosin. Unlike in the previous part, before her Arusin, where the father has the exclusive rights. And therefore, the Pasuk needs to spell each one out because each one is a separate thing.
So the Vav makes it one pasuk.
So the Vav makes it that we're taking the father from the earlier part and joining him together with the Arus of the second part. But so now that's the thing. We thought that it's joining it in the sense that maybe the father still keeps his exclusive rights, but the Chosin still has to have the father with him. He doesn't have exclusive rights yet until the Nisuin. What we're saying in that case, we wouldn't have needed the earlier pasuk to tell us that there's ever a time when the father has exclusive rights, because once we know he has after Arusin, of course he has before Arusin. Okay, the Gemara asks still.
So we're saying basically that the chassan would need the father, but we could have thought the father didn't need the chassan. So right. Basically, that's what it shows.
We can't say that. The answer is we can't say that because then there would be extra things in the pasuk over there. Then the pasuk would not. We wouldn't have needed the first part at all because we could have easily derived it by a kavachay. Okay, the Gemara
asks. It's still hard to say that when there's a vav chibur, you can say that one needs the other and the other one does need the first one. It's still not that simple.
Okay, but we still could have thought that way, and therefore we had to deduce that it can't be that way. But the Gemara asks, Ema av livi orus v'orus l'chode mefer. Okay, so maybe the other way around. Maybe you would say the other way around with an arusa. If the father wants to be mefer, he needs the orus as well. But if the orus wants to do it, he could do it all by himself. Maybe that's what the Vav is teaching us. The father still has the ability to join in with it, but he still needs the orus, because after all, the psukim are mentioning over there, the Shama Isha, her husband hears. But maybe we're saying the husband himself has the right to do it all by himself. And obviously, therefore, we would say we can't say that now there's something extra in the pasuk, because then we need to know before that the father had the exclusive rights. Now we're saying he loses that exclusive right. Now he has to join together with the chosin. But how do we know that the chosin still needs to join with the father? Maybe the chosin can do it all by himself. So now, in other words, the Ran says, now that we established that we can't say she's still considered, because she's still in her father's rishus, the father still has exclusive rights. Now that we shot that down, now the Gemara is going kind of to the other extreme. So now we're asking, how do we know the other way around? How do we know that each one of them depends on the other? Now that we thought that maybe the father doesn't depend on the chosin, now that we established that he does, maybe now we could say the chosin doesn't depend on the father.
One second. Yeah. If you say that the daughter still lives by the father, although she's an arusa, so then you make a kavachomer. If the father cannot, while the daughter is living with him, for sure, the son-in-law cannot also when she's not living with him.
Maybe, but not necessarily. We could after all.
Not necessarily.
Hold on. The Ran says like this, because the fact is, you look at the poshet pshat in the psukim, you forget about the, for example, the vav. Forget about the vav. You look at the actual psukim. V'imhoyoy siya le'ish, if she's mekodesh to a man, undareha olal, etc. V'shama isha b'yoyim shamei v'hechrish lo. If her husband hears and he's quiet, then her nedarim are in effect. But v'im b'yoyim shmaya isha yoni oisa, v'hefer es nidra aleha. So looking just at the simple psukim, without talking about vobs or anything like that, it would seem that the chosin has exclusive rights. So maybe that's what it means. Maybe it means that because we would say the chosin's power over her nedarim now is the stronger one, because after all, it says that more clearly in the psukim. The father were only learning because of the vav. So maybe we would say then that it means that the chosin's power is strong enough to do it all by himself. The father, since we're bringing him in only through a vav, so it means, in other words, the father has lost his exclusive reshus, and if he wants to do it, he needs to do it with the chosin. But how do we know? Where are we seeing that the chosin's power itself is still so weak that you need the father with him, that, in other words, we're using the vav to that extent? Where are we getting that from? V'chi tema. So you might answer, in that case, of the Kosev Rahman Alamali, then you could ask, in that case, then why does the Pasuk mention the father implicitly by putting in the Vav? If that were the case, if the Oros alone has the right to be made for the Nidarim, then they wouldn't need the Vav at all. You could answer, Miboyle di Hakim Hakim. Maybe you would say that the father has the rights to the extent that if he approves of the Neder, then it's approved of. In other words, maybe, in other words, the Pasuk will be telling us like this. We have the Vav there, so we know the father has some role in it. We'd be saying, hypothetically, that the Oros alone can be made for the Neder. However, we would say, when can he alone be made for the Neder? Only if the father was not Mekayim. But if the father was Mekayim, to that extent, we will use the Vav to say that if the father was Mekayim, then the husband, the Chosin, no longer can be made for. But how do we know that if the father was not Mekayim, that the Chosin needs the father to join together in the Afara? That we don't know so far. And the answer is, Imken, Beis Isha Nadar, L'mai Chosin. In that case, then now we have to look at the third section over there, where it talks about when she's already fully married, and we say that her chosin had, that her husband has the right to be made for her nedarim. So now we'd have to ask the same kind of thing as we did with the father. Why would the pasuk need to write, if that were the case, why would the pasuk need to write that once she's living in her husband's house, that her husband can be made for her neder? Same thing, kal v'chomer. We should be able to derive it by a similar kal v'chomer that we did before. Of Orus made for the Chodeh, Madach, when the father is still involved, as when she's in Arusa, we're saying hypothetically that the Orus alone can be made for Shaloi b'makam of Iboya. Would, needless to say, when the father is out of the picture, when she's completely living with her husband. So we wouldn't need to say that. So obviously, if the Pasuk has to spell out when she's married that her husband has the rights, has the exclusive rights, or the full rights over her nedarim, that implies that in the previous part, he does not have those exclusive rights. Otherwise, it could have only said it by the Arusa, and by a Kal v'chomer, we would have learned that the same thing is true by an Asura. Okay, still the Gemara says, Ema im bait, but still, you could say maybe that extra part, maybe those last psukim are teaching us a different din. Ema in base isha nadara loy mashain abal mefer b'koytmin. Maybe those psukim are teaching us the din that we mentioned before, that the husband does not have the ability to be mefer nadarim that took place before he married her. So maybe that's all it's for. So maybe, in other words, you could say that. You're arguing that the Pasuk didn't need to write that whole section because we could have learned from Kabbalah from the previous section. Maybe it needs to write us to tell that din, to tell us that specific din, that the husband cannot be made for Bekoitin. But how do we know, other than that, we could have learned the rest of the din by Kabbalah. And the Gemara answers, Umine, well then from that itself, from the very fact that he can't be made for Bekoidman, Orus made for Bekoidman, from that itself we learn that the Orus is able to be made for Nidarim that existed before the Erusin. Because after all, the Pasuk says, Ndoreha Aleha, she had Nidarim on her before. So now you're obviously not going to say that the Orus has stronger powers than the Orus is not going to have stronger powers than the husband. So therefore, if the Orus has the power to be made for Bekoidman, then there's no logical reason to think that the husband should not have the right to be made for Bekoidman. El Olav Mishim Shutfuse Da'av. So therefore, obviously, the reason why the Orus is able to be made for Bekoidman is because he has the father together with him And therefore that strengthens his position, and therefore, and then that makes it therefore that he's able to even do koyd. So in other words, that's what we're saying. So in the end, we're saying the orus has an advantage and a disadvantage over the husband. He has a disadvantage in that he needs to be together with the father, but that alone creates an advantage, namely that he's able to be made for bekoidman, which the husband is not. So that's the thing. If we didn't have this concept of koidman, then you're right. We would have said, we could have thought that the orus can be made for by himself, and so can the husband. And the pasuk would only need to, and the pasuk wouldn't have needed to tell us the third part about the third section about the husband. But once we do that, once we do, and we say the husband cannot be made for bekoidman, whereas the orus, the pasuk is saying that he could be made for bekoidman, what would be the logic? How can you say such a thing logically? Why should the orus have a stronger position? The reason is precisely because the father has to be involved as well. The fact that he has to join the father together with him in the Afara, that makes his position stronger, and that makes that he's able to be made for Nadarim that existed even before the Erusin. So therefore, so that's called Bekoidman, something before, yeah. Koidman means anything before he came into her life, anything before he was, so Bekoidman for an Erus would mean before the Kiddushin, Koidman for a husband would mean before the Nisuin. So in other words,
even before engagement.
Yeah, so in other words, right. So in other words, so if, again, if you have the girl made a neder, later that same day, the husband was Makadosh her. So now he and her father jointly can cancel her neder. But on the other hand, with a husband, it's not like that. If she made a neder during the Erusin, and then he married her, where now it changes, and now he's supposed to have exclusive rights over her nedarim, but he does not have that right for a neder that was made before the nisuin.
That's
halacha. That's what we're saying. That's halacha. So that's what we're saying. In other words, so if it hadn't been for the matter of koidmin, then yes, you're right. We could have said the pasuk would have not needed to mention the whole part about nesua. We could have learned it from arusa. But now we find that actually there was something about the husband, about the nesuin, that makes it weaker than the erusin. And why is that? Why do you have that difference of koidmin? Is because the orus has to join together with the father, but the husband does not. So therefore, so that alone, that demonstrates, therefore, it has to be that the orus does it together with the father, because otherwise there would be no reason, there would be no logical reason why the orus should have a stronger position than the husband. So therefore, from that itself, we can derive that the orus cannot do it without the father, otherwise there'd be no reason that he would have a stronger position as far as koyd. And this goes back to what I was saying before in Chelik Beis, the Rebbe said in Haisophus for Matos, the Rebbe points out that an avoider, this represents the idea, a person who's a husband where there's a full marriage, a full nisuin, represents a person who's on a higher level of avoider. He's most closely connected with the Eibishter, but he may feel that he doesn't depend on the Eibishter as much. So therefore, he's like a husband who feels, I don't need the father anymore. He's out of the picture. So he doesn't have the ability to affect koidmin, to affect things that are prior to Seder Hishtaushlis. Whereas a person who realizes I'm only an orus, I may be on a lower level, I haven't yet reached a higher level in connection to Hashem. I'm still like an orus who's still off, who my kala is still off limits to me. But I recognize that I depend on the father, I depend on the Eibishter, then he has the ability even to affect things from before Seder Hishtaushlis, even from Olam HaTohu, and to be able to elevate and refine that. Okay, so we'll continue the discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, and see another source. The Gemara is going to discuss another source for this din that the father, that when it comes to Erusin, it takes the Orus together with the father to be made for the Nedarim. So far, we derived it logically. So far, we derived it from a combination of the wording of the Pasuk and the Vav over there and the logic of why we need one part versus another. We're going to learn tomorrow. Tanit Veid Abishmal is going to give us a different source for how we know that, for how we know about a Naira Marasa that you need both. So we'll continue that tomorrow. And Daf Samach Ches, Be'ez Hashem.
Yes, we have a small